everyone. Welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Jerry.
And welcome to episode 129. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in with us. Just finished up an amazing stream a little bit ago. Still hanging out in Diamond 2. Jeskai Super Friends, where it's at. We're going to break it down a little bit later. But as always, Jerry, man, how have you been? What have you been up to?
Been great, man. Since getting out of school for the semester, got the summer off. Been playing some good games here and there. This Sunday, I went to GameStorm up in Lamont, Illinois. It's north of Joliet.
Okay.
Got to play some of the new Neoform deck. Deck's goofy. Went 4-1. Got $40 in store credit.
Nice. Now, how consistent did you see Neoform being now that we're back to the Vancouver Mulligan?
Me and two other people were playing it, and the deck's still consistent.
Okay, so, I mean, granted, yes, with the London Mulligan rule, I would say it makes it more broken because you see that full seven every time. But now that we're back to the Vancouver Mulligan, which is what they call the Scry Mulligan, which is you mull to six and then you'll scry, or you'll mull to five and then you'll scry.
Right, and we've already made up for that. We've made a couple changes to the deck list, and it's pretty good as to what we're doing right now. Like, we're doing some funny crap. There's going to be a card I'm going to talk about in a little bit that has an effect on two different decks from another set. And I told you to look at the price, so I don't want you to spoil it.
Okay.
And there's a reason that card is now $20, where it went from 2 to 20 in like a weekend.
All right. No, I'm excited to see. All right. As for me, outside of the Magic world, not really doing a whole bunch, you know, just day-to-day operations. But then, yeah, playing Arena, we got ourselves up into Mythic. Or, sorry, not Mythic. I keep saying it. One day I'll get to Mythic.
It's a Freudian slip. It's all right.
Yep. We're in Diamond 2, and I've been jamming Jeskai Super Friends. And the stream we just did, and for those who don't know, we do stream. We have our schedule up. Check us out, twitch.tv/thesnapcast, and you'll see what our schedule is. Bounces between myself and Tyler. But, Jared, you were with us. You got to see the beautiful beatdown by Fibblefip.
Yeah, man. I watched you kill someone with Fibblefip. That's hilarious.
And I think it's almost as much as I killed them with Fibblefip as they killed themselves on a misplay with their Sorcerer Spyglass.
I don't think it was a misplay. I think he intended on doing it, and he just drew it, and he thought he could do something with it, or he was real savvy and tried to get you to concede.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen.
So if you want to see what we're talking about, go over to YouTube, youtube.com/thesnapcast. We're going to upload the video. Bear with us in the first two rounds. They're kind of rough. But then Jerry comes in, gets me going. We get a couple of good wins in, and then that's it. It's a pretty short stream for our Thursday evening, just because we do have this podcast that we record. I've been bouncing around other decks too, other than Jeskai Super Friends. It was really good at Best of One. That's what I used to climb from Diamond 4 up to Diamond 2. And then I started playing Best of 3s again. I was doing Mono Red. I was doing Gruul. I was doing Esper Control, kind of like a Esper Hero. Bouncing around all those different decks just to get experience with. Some of those videos, if you check us out, you'll see I'm not the greatest when it comes to a control deck. That's not really my play style. I'm trying to learn it. It's getting there. It is a struggle, but it's a blast to try. And if you guys can join in and watch, maybe we can teach you something about it too. But this past week, we've actually had a lot going on in the Magic world. We have two new members in the Magic Pro League, and we had a huge resignation from the Magic Pro League. So we knew there was already going to be one spot. Yuya Watanabe ended up getting fired from the Magic Pro League. We can say those terms. They're under contract. He was fired. He's banned from Magic, kicked out of the Hall of Fame. Nice knowing you, Yuya. You're probably done with Magic. So we knew, okay, there's one spot open. Curious to see who's going to get it. And then it seemed out of the blue, Jerry Thompson quit the Magic Pro League. Okay, we've seen him boycott. He boycotted Worlds earlier. And he had some very valid points. We brought it up. And, you know, news went rampant of Jerry's resignation from the Magic Pro League. Or I should say quitting. I think quitting has a more of a sting to the Pro League than resigning. And the statement that he ended up putting out, it's really good. We're going to have it linked here. His too long didn't read is, "I joined the Magic Pro League in the first place because it seemed easier to make a difference from the inside. I was wrong. The lack of transparency and unwillingness to listen to feedback continues to be a huge issue within the community," which is a fact. Okay, this is something that we've seen. There's a lot of issues that Jerry brought up, And he had good fixes for him. It wasn't just, like we said back in the episode, it wasn't just, you know, him complaining. It was, these are legitimate problems you have, and this is how we need to do it. Jerry was the ambassador for us, essentially, of you guys are messing up at the top levels, and this is what you need to do to fix it. And now they're not. Then he goes on about the past 6 months in the Magic Pro League and how things were. And some of the issues he had were during contract negotiations, which he has in quotes, is pretty much WotC officials purposely not answering questions or telling them, and pretty much telling them, just sign or you walk away. Overall, wasn't the best way to start a new business relationship. Then he went on about this this boot camp for streaming, and it was mostly good, but it did have several issues. There are some seminars that he had to do, and they forced like even some of the Japanese players to fly to Washington. Why? Isn't this something that, especially this day and age, we can do video conference calls with? And then they were supposed to get emails containing summaries of the information and whatnot, but it never happened, or it didn't happen for 4 months, pretty much making that training useless. The feedback they gave to the team was essentially ignored. The Mythic Invitational, though it was a huge hit despite that duo standard format, coverage is immediately walked back to the status quo when it came to Mythic Championship 2. While not the only factor, it certainly is a large reason why the Twitch numbers were so poor. Communications, he says, are still atrocious, and at this point it's still even unclear that players are selected to represent the Magic at the highest level or not thoroughly vetted. Straight from Jerry, and we've talked about it, we're not going to call out names, but we know that there are some players within the Magic Pro League that we don't truly feel is up to par yet. Yeah, granted, they should be getting looked at. Okay, this is a potential candidate for a top 32. But when you look at the list for those in the Magic Pro League and their accomplishments, you'll see some stand out far greater than others. Okay, there may be reasons why the others aren't there. But that's my issue with the Pro League. And I think the Pro League, instead of pro meaning professional, we're going back to the old adage of the Pro Tour, and it is promotional. And we are promoting Magic to a broader audience to get more players in. And now that we have that as an esport, we can target an even bigger community of viewers and potentially players.
And it's not working, clearly. They keep losing viewers. People are tired of it. Mm-hmm. I think Jerry T, not to confuse him with myself, I think he threw shade at the whole MPL saying they were all scum. I truly believe that's what he was aiming at.
I will disagree with you. I don't think Jerry would go beyond that. I don't think he blames anybody in the Magic Pro League for being invited to the Magic Pro League, and nobody should. Okay.
I don't think so either. But Jerry T is a person who back in the day, he was not the nicest guy in the world. This is now 10, 15 years ago, and he's done some growing up. I think he's taken a bite at the apple in a unique shot here. Because now at this point, we've now seen four people leave the league, one for his own choice, and three they were forced out within a year. That's a 12.5% turnover rate amongst your best players in the world. That speaks a lot about Magic as a whole, and that's not good.
No, it's not. WotC has a lot they need to look at to make it better for us, to make it better for the community. Again, we're not going to call out names. That's not why we're here. Okay?
Nope.
I can't blame anybody for being offered a $75,000 contract to stream Magic, take part in these guaranteed cash tournaments, you know, because they accepted it. No, where I'm upset is, why is the head, the head of this team or this, you know, committee going after players when clearly there are other players out there with a more substantial background? That's where I stand. I mean, again, huge congrats to everybody who's in. You did it. You made it big in Magic. Okay, this is now like the new staple for making it big. I don't think winning a Pro Tour, granted, it is huge to win a Pro Tour, it's huge to win a Grand Prix, but the goal for most, I would say, anymore is make the Pro League, because that's guaranteed money. That's guaranteed income. $75,000 plus the Mythic Championships offer $7,500 to last place. For MC3, so Mythic Championship 3 coming up, last place gets $7,500. So now your $75,000 contract just became, there's what, two arena exclusive mythic championships?
I was of the understanding it was 3 arena exclusive and 4 paper.
Okay, so it's either 3-4 or 2-4. Either way, that's an extra
$22,500
on top of their $75,000 contract, on top of their streaming revenues they're pulling in, and any other sponsorships that they may have. It is a wonderful thing to be invited to it. And again, just huge congrats to those who were invited.
Yeah, very lucrative. The only downside is this MPL is actually, and I think this is what's happening, is that it makes you want to do something.
Yeah.
It makes you, well, not just make you want to do something. It makes these players, because it's so in and out now, people aren't guaranteed to stay so long. It's almost insinuating that you need to do something to make sure you keep yourself in as long as possible.
Yep.
I think that's another huge problem with it. I think it should be, this is like, because I don't know the details of the contract beyond the amount of money they're getting, but how long are they guaranteed in the league?
See, that's something that I don't know.
See, like, are they guaranteed a year or is it day-to-day basis? Because from what it looks like, it's day-to-day at this point.
Yeah.
Like, it's so tight to stay in at this point that you need to go above and beyond and mark your Tron lands, you know? Do things like that to keep yourself in.
Whatever it may be.
Yeah, whatever it may be.
But I'm going to say that the contracts are for a year. We don't know what it's going to take for them to stay in. And that's one of the complaints that Jerry Thompson had, was it's unclear how to stay in or what the metric is to get in. Because if you look at some, the latest two entrants that came in, Jessica Estefan and I can't even remember the guy from Team Liquid's name at the moment.
We'll go off his nickname. It's Svetch.
Okay, so Svetch, okay. Huge YouTuber, streamer, real big in Hearthstone community. He's member of Team Liquid for esports and that. But when you look at Jessica Estefan, okay, Grand Prix winner. First female Grand Prix winner. And also had a really good performance at Mythic Invitational, I believe, top 16th. Okay? GP win, performed very well at a high-end tournament. Good. Now we go to the other. Mythic number one. You know, ranked number one overall in Arena, and then finished the highest of any of the challengers. I do kind of like the aspect that he was the best challenger finished. Awesome. Okay, yep, definitely warrants being looked at. But when you stand that resume next to, like, multiple GP wins, multiple Pro Tour wins, Hall of Famers, Worlds, all of this, to me, you can't put those two on the same level, and I don't think those two should be in the same league. But again, though, that was Watsi's call to invite them. And now I look at it, and if I hit number one, boom, there's a huge check in the box for me to try to get to Magic Pro League. So that is a huge incentive for me to grind now, get to number one.
If Watsi could be more honest and just be like, hey, we're here promoting this, so we're going to put this guy here for promotion's sake,
yeah,
that'd be great. Yeah, just be honest.
Bringing in a broader audience. Let's do it.
Not lie to me and tell me that he's the best in the world, you know? I just don't believe that. The numbers don't say that.
But, again, congrats to them for making it to the Magic Pro League.
Yeah, if I was offered $75,000 to play Magic all day, I'd do it. That's easy.
100%. All right, so moving on now. We got some speculation here when it comes to Modern Horizons. Jerry, you pointed out an article that was printed a couple months ago. There's only going to be 5 reprints. From before 8th edition in this Modern Horizons. 249
only
cards.
Only 5, that's it.
5 reprints, and then the rest are all going to be brand new. There's some goofy stuff out there that can be done. There's a lot of speculation on Force of Will. That's why Force of Will is like a $140 card right now. But you're believing maybe more of a like a counterspell kind of thing?
Yeah, no. I'll give you my 5 cards I think are going to get reprinted, most likely.
Okay.
Is that cool?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Counterspell, Containment Priest, True Name Nemesis, Force of Will, and Veteran Explorer are all going to get reprinted.
Okay.
Those all seem like they all seem like reasonable cards that aren't completely over the top. Someone actually got real heated with me in a debate on an argument. They got real upset. Like, they would never let True Name into the format. It's too good. I'm like, what's a 3/1 for 3 doing in this modern environment? You tell me.
Yeah.
Like, it ain't doing anything. A 3-1 for 3 is getting sent back to your hand with a 2-mana 0/4 that becomes a 7/8. Like, you're... Get out of here. Nobody wants to hear your argument there. I think True Name would be fine. It would bring back, you know, give back some type of tempo list. I do not think Stoneforge Mystic will be printed.
No, and that's a curious thing, too, that a lot of people have been specking on, is the possibility of Stoneforge being printed. Some key wording in here is they will be reprinting 5 cards that have never been legal in Modern. I know I said from 8th edition and, you know, earlier, but there is the chance that, you know, people are like, oh, man, Stoneforge is going to get it. No, I don't think so either. I agree with some cards on your list. I could possibly see a card of each color being printed instead. I don't think we're going to get 3 blue cards, a white, and a green. I think we're going to get 1 of each. What those are...
That's possible.
My ability to speculate is terrible. Look at my stack of 100 Sarkins. They're still kind of hanging out, not doing anything.
The one that I'm almost like 100% on is the Counterspell. I think it's high time we bring that card into Modern Magic. We brought Lightning Bolt back, and that's been around, it's, you know, since the inception of Modern. If we can have Lightning Bolt, I think we can have Counterspell. Okay. Logic Knot is terrible. It is not doing enough for the blue-white control deck to be the best deck in Modern. I mean, you can look at the stats. Last 2 months, the best deck and control deck right now is Tron, followed by Phoenix and Dredge. So that tells me a lot of what the format's turning into.
Yeah.
I think it's time for Counterspell to get a real shot at actually being a played card outside of Pauper.
No, I enjoyed it, and it'll be interesting to see. We should have spoiler season coming up very soon because, I mean, face it, we are 1, 2, 3 weekends away from pre-release.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was supposed to start spoiler season this weekend
next weekend. Yep.
So, this weekend.
Saturday, Sunday, we should be seeing spoilers out already. So by the time you're listening to this, be checking out MTG Salvation, Mythic Spoiler, Reddit, all of that. If you want to avoid spoilers, avoid all those websites.
Nah, don't avoid spoilers. Nobody does that.
No. I mean, some people like actually doing that. We have a couple here at our local store. They hate spoiler season because everyone's talking about the cards, and they want to see these cards for the first time when they crack a booster pack. It's like, okay, I can get behind that in a sense.
Well,
but I'm good. I want to see what there is. I want to brew.
I can tell you that every single card game that has ever existed has always had a spoiler season.
Oh, yes.
So that this, you are a severe minority in that department.
Yep. But again, I mean, to each their own.
Yeah. If that's how you like to play your Magic, go for it.
All right. Let's get to some quick takes here. It's going to be a short episode just because there really hasn't been a whole lot going on. Actually, did we even have a major event over the weekend? I don't.
Yeah, we did. We had a Magic Mox happen.
Ooh, okay. How did that go?
Oh, give me a second here. Let me pull up some stats here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a MTGO Standard MCQ, and then the Modern Mox happen.
Ooh.
On the weekend of the 13th. The winner was, and this is a big thing here, the winner was Amulet Titan, featuring 3 copies of Karn the Great Creator in the main board to find your 1 copy of Wyrmcoil Engine, Walking Ballista, Tormod's Crypt, or Mycosynth Lattice, or 2 Engineered Explosives.
That is awesome.
Yeah. No, let's just do that, you know? Why not? Let's see. Other decks in there, Mono Red Phoenix actually outplaced the Is It Phoenix decks.
Yep.
Something we haven't seen in a long time. And funny enough, this is actually the downgraded version. Mono Red Phoenix has changed slightly. This is an older version. I will explain that in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
When we get to the next portion.
Okay, yeah, I just looked at this list. This is, it's got Soul Scar Mage, Monastery Swift Spear, the Bedlam Revelers, Fork
Bolt. This is an older version of the deck. The deck has since upgraded, and the upgrade is much better and very well-deserved.
One deck that stands out in this top 8 for me, though, is Pure Steel Paladin. Eggs.
Sure. Sramos. We got it, kids.
Yep. We got it. Infect is up here, too, which, again, is pretty surprising to see Infect up here. But there is a lot of control down at the bottom of the top 16. Of course, Dredge, Hollow One, Eldrazi Tron, The Rock, and Affinity.
Certainly.
Hang on. I do want to check out this Tron, see if they're doing the broken things, too. Not as much. Okay, no, this is more of a classic mono green Tron here.
Yeah, most definitely a classic thing.
Yep. And then, yeah, looking at standard. Okay, so you got blue-red aggro. So this is
it's Phoenix.
Arc Light Phoenix right here with Augur of Bolas. Augur of Bolas has definitely helped move this to the next level, as well as Finale of Promise. Because Finale of Promise is spellcast number one, and then you target your spells in your graveyard, and those are going to be spells two and three. And yep. Then you get your Phoenix back. Esper, yep. Excuse me. Esper Hero coming in at second and third place. White Weenie at fourth. Grixis Control, some red deck wins, and another White Weenie deck.
Not just red deck wins. Red deck wins is the most successful aggro deck coming out the gate.
It is.
Like, and it's different because mostly you're just adding more cards to the set. Red gets worse. It's not a week one thing to do. When cards come out and cards come in to fill the place, that's when red does its thing. And the big change here is Chandra Fire Artisan as the 4-drop of choice. Big reason is Esper can't mortify a Chandra.
Nope.
And I can confirm that this card is quite good. Nobody ever wants to attack into it because it makes your burn spells, which there are a plethora of them, way more lethal because she in herself is another burn spell.
Yeah. And then another good addition that Mono Red got to was Tybalt and his static ability of opponents not being able to gain life. That is one of the most brutal things as a Mono Red player, is when your opponent starts gaining incremental life, whether it's one or three at a time. That's it. That's an additional spell now you have to draw and cast. That's another turn that you have to try to beat them before your opponent has stabilized, established your board state, whatever it is.
Yeah, they have to deal with the Tybalt. Yep. It's I love the board plan here. The board plan with the deck is very simple. It's if Chain Whirler comes out in all the matchups where it doesn't, its thing doesn't actually affect the board that much. So like against Esper Do Nothing, you just pull out all four Chain Whirlers for four copies of Risk Factor.
Yep.
You drop an Experimental Frenzy and a Shock for two copies of Tybalt, and like that's your deck.
Yeah.
Like I love the board plan. Super sweet, super simple. Olivetti was playing three Chandra mainboard versus the Contrapt list, which he did not have any, surprisingly, not in the mainboard at least. But he also just eschewed out four drops altogether. Like, he is as low to the ground as humanly possible.
Yep, and that was one thing I was going to bring up, is the vast difference between these decks. And, like, some may look at it and just, like, quick glance and be like, oh, it's not that difference. 20 creatures to 16 and 24 spells to 20 spells. So that's a huge difference there.
Big decrease, bigger, lower to the ground. He's actually trying to go underneath other red decks. It's kind of funny.
And I mean, sure, in the standings he is above Olivetti, but they all finished losing in the quarterfinals. So that doesn't matter.
Yeah, but you know what? That doesn't matter. They did really well. They're gonna get their points, and I'm pretty sure they'll qualify for a Mox qualifier now.
Yep.
At the very least.
All right. So now moving on to some of my experience here in Arena. Jeskai Super Friends. If you have not seen this list, you have not ran into it, this is a deck list that you should get behind. We'll have a deck list posted down below. So Jeskai Super Friends, the biggest thing with this deck, it's a whole bunch of stupid planeswalkers that work very well together. When you get them out rolling well enough, you're drawing a card with Kazmini. You are drawing or looking up four cards with Narset. You're drawing a card with Teferi. Either one, you're drawing a card potentially, and then you're taxing your opponent's spells with your Kazmini as well as with Dovin. You're fogging your opponent's creatures with Dovin, and then you get Sarkhan out and you just make them all dragons and swing. I think the photo sent into the chat, I had 7/4/4 planeswalker dragons attacking.
It's so beautiful. The Sarkhan turning the corner is like the best part. Yeah. Didn't I tell you Sarkhan is the only planeswalker with an ultimate that's plus one?
Yeah, no, it truly is. He can enter the field plus and win the game right then. Even his static, if you minus three to make a dragon for protection, and you're able to spark double then and make a second dragon and turn everybody in, now when you're like your opponent's low creatures, a whole bunch of tokens try swinging in, they just get killed off by the static ability, and then you block the one creature that survived. We had that happen.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of some other stuff. We have four lands in there that act as rainbow lands for planeswalkers and gain us life every time. So our matchup against like mono red is actually pretty decent, 60-40, I would say, in our favor, if not 70-30.
Yeah, the incremental life is ridiculous.
I can definitely see this being Alex's argument for why he's not a fan of this standard right now, because it is battle cruiser. It truly is. Slam a walker, you better have an answer for it. Slam second walker, you need to have answers for these. Oh, here comes Sarkhan. Good games.
Yeah, the hero of the format, in my opinion, is mono red. Like, they're the real hero. They're trying to play a different type of game of Magic. Jesus.
Yeah, and but I was able to grind up the diamond with Gruul midrange. I had a fantastic Gruul. I was running Ilharg, wonderful boar. You can see one of my streams where I go up from, it was plat 4 to plat 2, almost plat 1, and I dominate. I lost a 1 deck the entire grind up. But as soon as I entered Diamond, though, it was a completely different league. There are so many control decks in Diamond at the moment. And I think this is one of the better ones to settle on.
It's pretty funny. You can see the difference in like deck selection choices the higher the rank goes.
Yep. And
like you can get away with playing some grimier stuff the lower ranks, but as you get up there, you got to start playing more meta.
Yeah, and a lot of people, too, when they get to Diamond, they might grind to Mythic, but the reward from going Diamond to Mythic really isn't worth it. It's one extra booster pack. That's it, and it's an extra pack of War of the Spark. And if you already have the full playset of everything, it's just going to be 20 gems. But the D-ranking is what I like for the Season Reset. Here we are in Platinum 2. I'm going to drop down to... I'll stay in Gold... Or, sorry, Diamond 2. I'll drop down to Gold 2. And then if I can get at least gold or Diamond 1 or Mythic, then I'll just go down to Gold 1. And I only have to like grind a little bit in Gold to get out of that hellhole again. We all know that's just a terrible place.
Yeah, Gold is a hellhole.
Yeah, it truly is. It was awful.
Like, I don't even... You play against the best of the random crap.
Yeah. Like, it's... Either just a huge slugfest with mono red or just, a bunch of jank. But, Jerry, now let's get to you here. You have a lot of insight on War of the Spark and its impact on Eternal formats.
Yeah, man, this set has actually done a lot to both Modern, Legacy, and Vintage. It's quite ridiculous. Okay. The first one we all know about is good old Karn boy. You can go ahead and talk about Karn. You like it the most.
Oh, I love Karn. Karn the great creator. He truly is the greatest of creators. As you said, he's an Amulet Titan right now. And then he's a wonderful tool in Tron. And there is a dispute going on in our local Facebook group about it's not that good of a combo with Karn and Mycosynth Lattice. I'm sorry, but you don't truly understand the impact that these two cards have together. And this is to any individual who I would say is ignorant on it. Now, if you have play experience against it or whatnot, I'm not bashing this towards you, but the people who just down talk and say a 10 mana combo can't win, I present you Tron. Turn 3 Tron. Okay, you got 7 mana. Tap 4 of it. Get Karn the great creator out with 5 loyalty, minus 2. Search up for Ensnaring Bridge or Trinisphere.
Yep.
Now you've protected yourself. If Karn lives to see the next turn, you minus him down to 1 loyalty, and then you get Mycosynth Lattice, you land it, and it's essentially good games at that point. Fetch lands can no longer fetch.
No, the kicker with the Karn altogether is you don't have to find the combo if you know you can't win with it. You just grab another piece out of your wish list.
Yeah, your sideboard is a like, wish
There's
board
other
now.
Things you can do.
Chalice of the Void, Ensnaring Bridge, Trinisphere, those are just a couple of the big pieces that you can grab. Any other good...
Like, I made a joke of a deck list with you earlier, and I'm actually... It was originally a joke, and then it turned out to be, wow, I'm actually going to do this. Where I play Mono Blue Tron with 24 lands, 4 Expedition maps, 4 Karn, 2 Coax from the Blind Eternities, and a bunch of control crap. And then my whole sideboard is 15 individual wishlist cards.
Yeah.
Like, why isn't, like, that can actually be a real thing that we're just doing now. I see nothing wrong with it.
And the great thing about your wish board is it's protected. Okay, can't get hit with Unmoored Ego, Slaughter Games, or whatever it may be. So you can put...
Can't surgical extraction.
Yeah, doesn't get hit by surgical. So you can put an O-Stone in it. You can put a Worm Coil in it. You can put a Ballista, Tormund's Crypt. All of your hate artifacts can go in your sideboard. And that's all your sideboard is anymore. It's just a wish board at that point. And you could do one-for-one swaps if you want to increase the volume of cards you have in your deck of a certain type. But you could almost just run back the same 60 or maybe only have a 10-card wish board and then have five cards to side in.
Sure. Or you can change it to where the wish board has more cards that you do want in the main board at post-board games. Like I've thought about like three Worm Coil engines in the sideboard to be able to find, like, because Karn minusing for the Worm Coil engine when you don't have Tron and then you will have Tron on turn five, which is what usually happens in Mono Blue Tron, is the reason why you have the Worm Coil all on the board for game one. But in games two and three against like a burn deck, you can put like two Worm Coils in the deck and one in the board, so you don't spend a turn playing the Karn in a situation where you can't do it.
Right.
So there's so much play involved with the Planeswalker. And this didn't just go for Tron. This also went for Amulet Titan. In Legacy, people have been doing it in Cloud Post or Ancient Tomb Eldrazi decks. And the same thing in Vintage. It found its way into workshops because it's great in the shop's mirror and it randomly hoses everyone playing Power 9.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is a simple turn one with shops, any mocks, any way to make one free mana. Now you have Karn.
Sadly, it actually, gratefully, you can't use shops mana to play it, but that deck can accelerate mana outside of shops. Like, it can do its thing with Ancient Tombs, Cities, Black Lotus, Moxen. You get the idea.
Yeah, sorry. I obviously don't play. So, but like you said, there are a multitude of ways to get to your four mana on turn one.
And Karn is, you know, he's seen play in every format.
Yeah.
The next card that's also done this, Narset, has seen play in every single format.
I mean, why not limit your opponent to drawing one card per turn?
Limiting your opponent to one card per turn is good enough. The fact that it can also look at the top four cards twice is also very good. You know, the back half of Search for Ezcanta. But it's a more streamlined version in colors that is of Leovold in Legacy. Different variations of Stoneblade and Miracles have picked it up as a 2 to 3 copies of it. It's a blue card, can be pitched to the Force of Will, and obviously it shuts off Brainstorm. Good enough.
Yeah.
The same thing in Vintage. Turn one Narset prevents a lot of decks from doing things. Paradoxical Storm can't win with a Narset on the battlefield. That's game over. Dredge can't Bazaar of Baghdad. That's game over. And that's what Dredge has turned into now in that format. It's 56 cards and 4 Bazaars. So that game is over. So Narset obviously hard locks those formats out. But where I think it's the most and the grimiest of them all is its impact in Modern. There's a deck out there called Pitch Blue, if you want to look that up. Quite the hilarious deck. It was designed by Conley Woods, the rogue deck designer himself, and it actually has done relatively well in different leagues on Magic Online. It features the ability of utilizing her full static ability on top of cards like Day's Undoing. Day's Undoing went from $2 to $20 in the matter of a weekend because with a Narset on the battlefield, that's a mind twist for them and a reload for you.
Oh my gosh.
So that's the big thing that it's also turned into. And that deck was also created as a response to the Neoform deck because it plays a ton of free spells. We're talking Disrupting Shoal, Commandeer. There was one list I saw who played a one of mainboard Gristle Brand just so he could commandeer the either the Neoform or the Eldritch Evolution that they're using to find his own Gristle Brand.
That's awesome.
Like, that's how grimy that deck is. The other thing it does is it plays this it's a 2-mana 1/2 called Lorekeeper. Its ability is to loot. It's the best 2-mana looter there is because of the extra point of toughness. That's why they play it. It was printed in Ravnica City of Guilds as an uncommon. And what you do is, at the beginning of your opponent's upkeep, you activate the ability with a Narset on the battlefield, and they can't draw a card on their draw phase. They are locked out of the game.
Yep.
It is a turn 2, turn 3 lock.
Yeah. It's so dumb.
Yeah, like this is what Modern's turned into. Like, we are in La La Land with the crazy nonsense that is just happening.
Good old cheese combos.
Right. And in that same deck, some people are playing Saheeli right alongside it, where she's found play in every single format. The dead deck that was the Mentor deck has now resurged because Saheeli is a more variant. Like, people were originally saying that it was worse, and that's where I disagree. It is not worse. It is a variant version of it, of the Monastery Mentor, because being able to copy an artifact is way too good in this format. Like, being able to copy a Black Lotus is some crazy good stuff right there. Just saying.
Yeah.
Next one I mentioned, I alluded to it earlier, was a Dreadhorde Arcanist.
Okay.
The big thing you can do with the Dreadhorde is that in Modern, people have picked up that it's a very good alternative to Tarmogoyf in Death Shadow Zoo, where you use your copy of Become Immense, targeting it, and then move to combat and attack, and target it again with the original, with the copy of Become Immense, making it a 13-15 trampler. And then you hit it with a Team or Battle Rage, and the game's over.
Yeah, no, there's various Dreadhorde Arcanist decks going around right now, even in Standard, that seem pretty busted. I played a little bit of a Arcanist list there. It was the only one that I actually lost to. We found a build, a decent one is Temur. It was all right. I don't think it stands up very well in the legitimate meta that is Paper Standard, but it's a blast to pilot.
It's fun to pilot there. I don't think it's good enough there. We're talking about, like, in modern, you're playing more broken spells.
Yep.
Like, this is where this card is shining.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, another version of the deck was playing Mutagenic Growth, and this guy went Mutagenic Growth, attack, loop back, dismember, rip a card apart. Being able to every single turn flashback Inquisitions and Thought Seizes every time you attack is very brutal against the heavy control or a heavy Tron meta.
Yeah.
Like, the card does everything in that deck. And I alluded to it earlier that this was the upgrade from Bedlam Reveler in All-In Phoenix for Mono Red. Bedlam Reveler is no longer the thing they're doing now. They play Dreadhorde Arcanist because being able to loop back spells additionally on top of Faithless Lootings gives the deck more reach, which is what it really needed.
Okay.
The next one, kind of obvious, Dovin's Veto. It's a strict upgrade. However, you have to be smart about it. Dovin's Veto is not going to end all combo decks. People seem to have this thought process that it's doing it. And I watched Ad Nauseam Cat just beat the crap out of his opponent because he's playing Silence and Grand Abolisher, which are cards that, one, can't be vetoed and gives your turn the inability for your opponent to cast spells. And the other one, you must answer it or they're going to kill you. So you have to be smart with your vetoes. They're not the be-all, end-all, but they are a great tool. The next card, Ilrog, has actually seen play in Modern. And Rob, it's your favorite deck.
Oh,
it's played in Goryeo's Vengeance.
So fun with this. So we tried it on stream. I think we went 3-2 with it, for those who saw. And we're going to do another league with it. I think we're going to do another crazy combo weekend or something like that. And we'll try to do these themes. But yeah, being able to Goryeo's Vengeance a Ilharg onto the field and then slamming down an Emrakul side-by-side with Ilharg or slamming down Crystalbrand with it is absolutely busted.
Yep, it's just another Through the Breach for the deck. And it's actually castable. Like, that's so important. Like, sometimes you just can't win, but you can cast the 6-6 and kill them. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah, and it has Trample, so it can't just get chumped.
And the other deck this has seen play in was your other favorite deck, Scapeshift. Like, why would you not? It's just it's better, like, the old Through the Breach versions, which people liked, but they were, like, a little too glass cannony. This card's just good. Like, this replaces Through the Breach in that deck. Being able to attack with it, getting your Titan in, your Titan still finds two lands because it entered the battlefield. Like, what's not to like about that? The card's seeing play in just about every deck that you play in that format. And you know where I want to try this, Rob?
Where?
Mono Red Tron.
Oh god, we're doing that again?
Yeah, we're gonna Mono Red Tron it. Why not?
Okay, I'm down. I still got my Pyromancer's goggles anyways. Let's go.
Not only do we get turn 3 double Stone Rain, but we get to run out some Ilrogs and, like, I don't know, run out another Fatty Boom Boom. Like, you change your creature base a bit. Like, you get World Breaker. I mean, you don't get its cast trigger, but it's still a big creature. You get Worm Coil Engine. That's great.
Yeah.
Like, why not?
And, I mean, you can still jam Emrakul in there anyways because it's Tron.
Yeah. And the last card I want to talk about for this week, because there's a whole other series of cards that we'll talk about, like, later on for next episode next week. will be a Finale of Devastation, has seen some real modern play too, is that it's a slightly different Green Sun Zenith. It's seen play in, you guessed it, Scape Shift, being that it is another way just to find a Primeval Titan. It's seen play in Hate Bears, as people now are actually going back to old school green white Hate Bears, featuring cards like Knight of Autumn, Thalia, Guardian of Thraben. One copy of Gaddock Teague. Remember, if you have a Teague out, you can't cast this card, but it helps you find a Teague in the matchups where it matters. So Finale Devastations give that the toolbox. It's also seen play in the Devoted Druid combo decks that were originally Coco decks, but now they've started playing Finale of Devastation and some with Vivian's Arcbow, because you can, both of those cards, funny enough, get, you know, if you have infinite mana, you can use the X cost in them to find the card that kills them.
Right.
So yeah, War of the Spark has had a wild impact on every format. I was really surprised at some of this. And the fact that Narset and Saheeli were uncommons feels like, oh my god, thank you for making them uncommon, because had these been rare, they would be easily $30, $40 chase rares out of the set.
Yeah, no, it was very thankful to see the rarity split when it came to some of these cards.
Definitely.
But I think that's going to do it for us. Jared, do you have anything else?
Nah, man. Everyone stay tuned. I'm doing a PTQ next weekend up here in Chicago. I'm excited for that. So I'll let y'all know how that turns out.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, no, I can't wait to hear it. But
And it's a straight up PTQ. It's winning in.
Nice. That's one thing I like about these MCQs. But that's going to do it for us. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Be sure to stay tuned, as we do have, you know, our stream schedule is up. Check us out, twitch.tv/snapcast, at Team Snapcast on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're all over the place. It is just, it's a blast what we're able to do now. We're expanding. Keep an eye out. We have a lot more news coming out, too. That's going to do it for us tonight. Y'all have a great evening.
Oh, snap.